of the morning, Frieda versus the Commissioner of Internal Revenue. Ms. Johnson.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jenny Johnson. I represent the appellant taxpayers in this case. Your Honors, this case involves the proper tax treatment of a payment that CNF Packing received from Pizza Hut in settlement of CNF's claim for trade secret misappropriation. My clients, the appellant taxpayers, were the shareholders or spouses of the shareholders of CNF, which was an S corporation. So the income of CNF flowed through on their tax returns, which is why they are the people here appealing this determination. My clients, the appellants, reported the settlement payment as capital gain on their returns in accordance with the way CNF had reported the payment as capital gain. The commissioner determined that the settlement payment was ordinary income, and the tax court agreed. The taxpayers are appealing that determination to this court, seeking reversal of the tax court and a finding that the commissioner's deficiency determinations are in error. The facts of this case are simple and undisputed. CNF supplied sausage to Pizza Hut and developed a special process for making sausage that it maintained as a trade secret. CNF's trade secret was a capital asset. Pizza Hut misappropriated that trade secret by disclosing it to a different meat supplier. And CNF and Pizza Hut settled CNF's claim for misappropriation of a trade secret in 2002. At the time of that settlement, the only claim that CNF had against Pizza Hut was for trade secret misappropriation. The correct tax treatment of this settlement payment, therefore, should also be simple and straightforward. Settlement proceeds received as a result of a claim for misappropriation of a capital asset are capital gains. If Pizza Hut had acted lawfully and purchased CNF's trade secret before disclosing it to the other supplier, there is no question that the amount received by CNF would be capital gain. The fact that Pizza Hut acted tortiously, forcing CNF to sue for compensation for its trade secret, does not and should not impact the tax treatment of the payment received by CNF.
Your original complaint, claimed for lost profits, lost opportunities, operating losses, and expenses. Is that right? Did that start at the beginning? Is that where that language got in there?
That language got in the complaint in 1993 and then was in the second amended complaint, which is the one that keeps getting referred to.
But for all of the different things you were, by fraud, everything else, most of which we dismissed, is that right?
Right. As the case wound its way through extensive motion practice at the district court level, and then an appeal to the federal circuit, and a remand, and then another motion for summary judgment, the only claim that CNF had in 2002 when it settled was trade secret misappropriation.
Well, the government keeps focusing on this fact about lost profits that brought out in the complaint, mm-hmm. saying, well, that means at least, I guess, an admission or something that all this was lost profits. Is it your position that by the time it got funneled down to just that one issue, that at best these four things are, I guess, identification of value, of what the value of the capital asset would be. Is that your position?
It's our position that those lost profits and the rest of what was listed in the complaint is merely a measurement of damage and how you value the capital asset.
At least at the stage of the only one issue left, I guess.
Correct, because there had been some other claims that were raised where if CNF had recovered its lost profits as a result of those other claims, for instance, tortious interference with contract, those damages could have been classified as ordinary income. But because they were received in exchange for a claim for misappropriation of a trade secret, it was compensation for damage to their trade secret, which is a capital asset.
But in filing your tax return, as I understand it, about a third or some portion of the award was designated as regular income. ordinary income?
Actually, that was in the reporting of the award that the taxpayer, well, that CNF received from IBP, which is the other meat processor that supplied to Pizza Hut. They sued both IBP and Pizza Hut. The case against IBP went to trial and then got appealed and then actually finally got paid out after the Federal Circuit's appeal.
Okay, because I wasn't clear on that. I wondered if, right. if are you claiming then the entire, I'll call it settlement or whatever, of the, of the misappropriation was capital gain on a capital asset or was part of it attributed to ordinary income?
The entire payment that was received from Pizza Hut was taxed as capital gain, reported as capital gain on the return, and should correctly be taxed only as capital gain. The amount received from IBP is not at issue before the court. I would take the position that all of that should have been properly taxed as capital gain, but the way the return was prepared, it actually did allocate some toward ordinary income.
I just want to be clear. I was trying to get that just cleared up. In other words, but it is the issue we're talking about here is that all of whatever you ended up with, the attorneys came out pretty well.
Yes, they did.
So it should all have been attributed to capital gain as opposed to ordinary income.
Absolutely. Yes, because it was all for damage to a capital asset. What we have here is a situation where the commissioner has agreed that CNF's only claim at the time of settlement was misappropriation of a trade secret. They've agreed that that trade secret is a capital asset, and they've agreed in their brief before this court that damages recovered for loss of value of a capital asset are taxed as capital gains. The only possible logical conclusion from that is that the settlement payment CNF received is capital gain.
The IBP award included things that could be considered income, didn't it?
The IBP award, and this is a little bit confusing because that's not the tax year or the payment that's before the court, but it was also based on a claim where it was a claim for trade secret misappropriation as well. But that arguably could represent ordinary income because IBP was the competitor who, you know, received the profits that CNF should have received, whereas Pizza Hut was never the competitor who received profits that CNF could have received. It was the entity that took the trade secret and passed it along to someone else.
Was the settlement agreement with Pizza Hut specific about what the payment was being made for?
It was not.
It could have been, though, right? It could have broken it out as to so much as for the infringement and so forth.
Well, there was no infringement at issue at this point. The only claim was for misappropriation of a trade secret, which is fundamentally different from infringement of a patent or some other intellectual property right. Misappropriation of a trade secret is not something where you seek a reasonable royalty like you do with infringement for a patent. It's once a trade secret, the value of a trade secret is the competitive advantage that you have over others simply because of the secrecy of the information. So once that the secrecy of the information is taken away, which is what Pizza Hut did, that trade secret itself suffers damage, and that property right, which is a capital asset, is damaged. With a patent, which can be infringed, it's different because the information is already made public, filed with the USPTO, and the patent holder's property right is a right to force other people to pay them a reasonable royalty to use that information. It's a very different property right than the one at issue with a trade secret here. So the government's position seems to hinge on this idea that misappropriation is not automatically damage to a capital asset, which doesn't make any sense if you understand and think about what kind of property rights someone has in a trade secret and look at the restatement of torts and a description of what constitutes misappropriation. It is damage to a capital asset. The way the tax court looked at this is a misapplication of the origin of the claim test. Everyone agrees that that's what governs this, is the origin of the claim test. But as this court recognized in Anchor Coupling back in 1970, the Supreme Court specifically rejected an origin of the claim test that focused on the primary purpose for which a lawsuit was brought and required people to look at the motivation of the plaintiff and decide what they were really seeking in order to determine the tax treatment of settlement payment or of the tax treatment, in that case, actually, of expenditures. So this court recognized in anchor coupling that the Supreme Court had rejected that analysis and instead had adopted a much more objective analysis in the Gilmore case, and that what you do when applying the origin of the claim test is look at you look at the actual nature and basis of the action settled. So the action settled here is misappropriation of a trade secret, and you look at that without digging into more, as the court called them, elusive determinations that would cause difficulty in the administration of the tax laws. The goal here is to create a rule that makes sense and that people can apply when they're filing their tax returns. And the rule that we have suggested to the court, that a settlement payment that is received solely for breach or for misappropriation of a trade secret should be reported as capital gain. That is, of course, the really only consistent way to decide this case, consistently with the Wellpoint decision that this court rendered in this past March. In that case, the court was actually analyzing a settlement payment made and how that settlement payment should be treated for the person who made the payment rather than the recipient. And the commissioner took the view, and the court agreed in that case, that any that Wellpoint that the dispute about Wellpoint's right to use its assets for profit was capital, and that therefore the settlement payment should be capital and not ordinary. In that case, claims were made by three states that charged Wellpoint with using assets they had acquired to make a profit in violation of the restrictions of the charitable status that the acquired companies had placed on use of their assets. The court found that the attorneys general were trying to strip Wellpoint of its equitable ownership, which the court defined as its right to use the acquired assets for profit. That's exactly what CNF was suing about here, its equitable ownership of its trade secret. And Pizza Hut was trying to strip CNF of its right to use that trade secret for profits. This court, just as recently as March, explained that whether the origin of a claim is a dispute over a capital asset or over the day-to-day operations of the business is not to be decided by reference to the outcome of the suit. It makes equal sense that the origin is not to be decided by the measure used to value the capital asset. Rather, the origin of the claim, equally here as in Wellpoint, is the enforcement of the right to use a capital asset to generate income and profit.
Deserve some time, Ms. Johnson.
I do. Thank you. It is therefore in our position that a bright line rule is an appropriate one in this case.
All right. Thank you. Weiner.
Morning. May it please the court, opposed counsel. As counsel informed the court, the question presented in this case is a proper characterization of settlement proceeds that CNF received from Pizza Hut as to a misappropriation of trade secrets claim. And they advanced two arguments as to why those proceeds should be characterized as capital gain as opposed to ordinary income, which is what the commissioner determined the proceeds should be characterized as, and the tax court agreed. Excuse me. The first argument being that the origin of the claim was for loss of a capital asset, and the second argument was that the capital asset, the trade secret, was sold or exchanged. And I'll try to address both in turn. But
could you focus also on the standard of review that we should use, whether it should be clear error or de novo?
Certainly, Your Honor. Let me address that question first. As we reflect in our brief, the question as to the origin of the claim is a factual determination guided by legal principles. you know, as this Court's pointed out in Wellpoint, there's many different terms that are used to connote that same sort of substantive point, you know, mixed question of fact and law. But this Court has said that in those instances where the ultimate determination depends heavily on the facts, in which the trier of fact is obviously in best position to determine that, and as well, the consistency is between different judgments when the individual facts will determine the ultimate determination, being somewhat legal in nature because it is, again, guided by legal principles, that a clearly erroneous standard of review applies. And we agree that it should apply here. Obviously, as the Court pointed out in Wellpoint, there's a Supreme Court case from 30-some-odd years ago that indicates otherwise. It's in a footnote. It's completely unexplained. It's questionable as to whether it really is. I mean, obviously, it's Supreme Court dicta, so it has considerable importance. But it's possible that it's dicta nonetheless. And in addition, that had to do with a sham transaction and a non-origin of the claim analysis, and so therefore there might be substantive differences as well there. But I think that consistent with this circuit's treatment of the standard of review, this would clearly fall under the category of cases that are treated clearly erroneously.
One fact, it's not disputed, I guess. If you go through this process, it was a capital asset, it is a trade secret, and the bottom line is what this whittled down to was for misappropriation of that trade secret. Is that, the government's on to that, right?
The government agrees that this has to do with misappropriation. The trade secret was the only claim surviving. That a trade secret is a capital asset, yes. However, where we strongly disagree is that misappropriation is necessarily the loss of the capital asset. There was no loss of the trade secret in this case.
Wait a minute. How did they? What was not lost?
The property right that CNF had in the capital asset.
The property right, isn't it the control of the asset itself? Once it's dispersed to others, it loses all of its value, doesn't it?
It does if it is publicly distributed. But this
What do you mean? You mean put out on the Internet or
such that it is readily available? I'm sorry?
Competitors have it and use it.
Yes, Your Honor, to the point that it is readily available for competitors to use it, then there would be a loss of the capital asset. In this particular case, CNF disclosed the trade secret to Pizza Hut under a confidentiality agreement. It disclosed the trade secret to other Pizza Hut suppliers under a confidentiality agreement. And Pizza Hut misappropriated the trade secret by disclosing it to one other competitor that CNF has asserted misappropriation against, and that was found to have been liable for misappropriation and was under Kansas law obligated therefore not to disclose it and not to use it for its own personal good.
What control of the process did CNF retain?
It retained all the rights that it had in the trade secret to begin with.
Not to begin with. I said what was left after IP or whatever had it.
What was left was the right to exclude and the right to prevent the distribution of the trade secret going forward, just like they exercised that right against Pizza Hut and against IBP in this case. That right survived the misappropriation that Pizza Hut perpetrated.
I don't see where there's any of the original value left.
Well, the original value of the trade secret, now I'm not, there seems to be that the original value of the trade secret was lost, but it was not lost due to the misappropriation. The original value of the trade secret was lost because the competitors found that CNF was in fact producing a better product. They were making sausage in a more effective way. It retained more of its weight. It looked more like homemade sausage. And they worked on improving their own technology that was not a part of the CNF process. What was characterized as the new technology in this case was the CNF process. The old technology was an old thermal case that I guess pervaded the industry. And when CNF started producing sausage with the new technology, their competitors caught up, which basically made the CNF process obsolete. So I'm not suggesting that CNF actually has value in the trade secret anymore. What I'm saying is that loss of value cannot be ascribed
to... What was misappropriated?
What was misappropriated is the fact that Pizza Hut acquired and used CNF's trade secret without its consent. And as a result, CNF had a claim exercising its protections under Kansas trade secret law to seek the lost profits, the profits that it would have received had Pizza Hut not misappropriated the trade secret. Now, excuse me, so the fact of the matter is that without the misappropriation claim, CNF would have exploited its trade secret and made lots of profits. It would have sold a lot of sausage to Pizza Hut. It would have been able to sell that sausage at a premium due to its monopolistic position in the marketplace. And the fact that it sues for the lost profits does not mean that it gets to recharacterize the transaction as capital gain, because it still had the capital asset.
Yeah, but it didn't have the, what they call the controlled competitive advantage, or what I would call a lost market power that you have when you control the asset.
The competitive...
Once you're... The huge competitor gets it and gets all the business from Pizza Hut by Pizza Hut's design. It seems that something more than lost profits. I mean, yeah, you can calculate all of this. That's why I look at this, these things where it started out in the original amended complaint, lost profits, lost opportunities, operating losses, and expenses. Yeah, that's, those identify things that are gone, but it seems to me all that is used for, when you get down to misappropriation, is what is the value of that asset. And those are the things that are gone. But it just seems to me the whole value of that asset was sucked out of it with the misappropriation. Now you're saying, well, it's obsolete, and they came up with new inventions and stuff, and maybe the CNF's original process or trade secret isn't worth anything, because of everybody's using something else. If that's the case, if that's a fact that's found, okay, well, that may be different.
I'm not
is that
saying,
what you're saying?
No, I'm not saying that from the original, the period of time in which CNF sought lost profits for, from it's not entirely clear from the record, from about 86 to about 1993, that the marketplace caught up. My point is that subsequent to the misappropriation, the marketplace rendered the trade secret obsolete by virtue of coming up with a better way to make sausage than what CNF had done. Now, that means that CNF's process no longer has value, but that does not mean that what CNF did recoup through its misappropriation claim was lost profits, which is exactly what it says in its complaint. I mean, you point out that CNF had said that what it, as a result of the misappropriation, I'm paraphrasing.
Well, as
that
a result of a whole lot of other things that they alleged in the amended complaint.
Right, but
they were no longer in it. The only thing we're down to now is the misappropriation.
Very true, but within the misappropriation count, what they allege is that as a result of the misappropriation, we suffered lost profits, lost opportunities, operating losses and expenses. Now, the fact that the other counts have been removed doesn't take away the fact that that's what they're alleging as to their misappropriation count. In addition to that, they have not alleged anywhere within the misappropriation count or the factual, the underlying facts, the underlying factual allegations, that they lost the use of the trade secret by virtue of its public disclosure.
And they lost it, but it was for some other reason.
It was for some other reason that had nothing to do with the misappropriation perpetrated or allegedly perpetrated by Pizza Hut. It wasn't in the complaint. It wasn't substantiated by Frieda's testimony at trial. And it wasn't in the settlement agreement.
Okay, so if it comes down to that, that's the government's position. Yeah, they may have lost it, but it wasn't because of the misappropriation.
Correct. And to underscore that point, that's what Kansas law says. Kansas law defines misappropriation not by the loss of the trade secret, but by acquisition or use or disclosure. Now, I agree with you, Your Honor, that public disclosure of a trade secret does eliminate whatever rights the trade secret holder had in that trade secret. However, there is no allegation of public disclosure here. IBP had a duty under Kansas law to maintain the confidentiality of that trade secret because it obtained the knowledge improperly. Now,
Pizza Hut gave it to him.
Correct.
And that was IBP. What is it?
IBP.
IBP knew that.
Correct.
Knew that Pizza Hut shouldn't have been able to do that, but they took it anyway and took all the business. And but because they didn't tell anybody, they didn't tell another big pizza company or something that they're trying to sell to. They got an agreement maybe they kept with Pizza Hut. They didn't tell anybody and got all the business. Meantime, C&F, well, gee, we didn't.
Well,
didn't tell everybody, therefore, I guess, I don't know what I guess.
I guess is, at taking a stab at finishing your thought, Your Honor, is that they were recouping the lost profits they would have made if IBP and Pizza Hut had not misappropriated their trade secret. Now, it did not. What happened in terms of Pizza Hut's misappropriation, for example, did not prevent C&F from exploiting their trade secret, from canceling the confidentiality agreements it had with Pizza Hut, from exploiting the trade secret with, you know, by working with Domino's or Little Caesars or any other major. And at that point, if Little Caesars or Domino's had also misappropriated the trade secret, then just to show that they had a property right that survived the misappropriation, C&F could have asserted a misappropriation claim against them, that you misappropriated my non-public information that I provided to you in confidential. Now, that's a hypothetical, but that I think illustrates the difference between the loss of profits that C&F would have made if not for Pizza Hut's misappropriation, which is in effect what it was suing for, and the loss of the trade secret, which still exists, and which existed beyond the misappropriation that was allegedly perpetrated by Pizza Hut.
Maybe C&F could have gone to Domino's and say, hey, maybe they couldn't because of the agreement they had. I don't want to dominate it.
And just to finish the thought is that Kansas law also says that the losses that you're entitled to on the basis of a misappropriation is the actual loss or unjust enrichment. Now, the actual loss, if you look to what we cited to, was the restatement of unfair competition, is normally the lost profits, lost royalties, which, by the way, Kansas law does provide for lost royalty. A court has the power to order a reasonable lost royalty, which is another example of something that would be ordinary income. Or if there was public disclosure as a result of the misappropriation under Kansas law, then you could get the value of the trade secret. But there has been no public disclosure in this case. There's no evidence of public disclosure, and I think that point is absolutely pivotal. And by way of a comparison, we think that this case is very much like the Mathey case that we cited about. And one of the things that I think that you were sort of focused on, Your Honor, in your previous questions was the fact that, yes, but they sort of lost they were deprived of a competitive advantage for a number of years when Pizza Hut misappropriated their trade secret. Well, the same thing happened in Mathey, in which Mathey, and I saw this, just to finish this one thought, is that Mathey's patent was infringed, and the court said what a patent owner loses from infringement is the acquisition of a just and deserved gain from the exploitation of the invention embodied in a patent. Therefore, the award of damages in patent litigation is ordinarily profits lost by the patent holder. And in this case, you have C&F losing its just and deserved right to exploit its trade secret, and therefore it sues for lost income and obtains that lost income, but without public exposure, it hasn't lost the underlying asset. Thank you, Your Honor, for additional time.
Ms. Johnson.
I'd like to start by quickly addressing the standard of review question here. We take the position that this should be de novo review based on the pure language of the Supreme Court case in Frank Lyon. If that language is to be given any import at all, this is the case where it would mean something, where it says that the general characterization of a transaction for tax purposes is a question of law subject to review. Here, there are absolutely no disputed facts that are relevant to the court's determination. This is a question of law, and the tax court got it wrong, and we're asking you to get it right. The next issue, Appelli argues that public disclosure is a pivotal point of their argument. That doesn't make any sense. If you actually read trade secret law and the Ruckelshaus opinion, public disclosure is one of the elements that you look to determine whether someone has a trade secret. You can't have a trade secret if you've publicly disclosed it, if you haven't taken enough measures to keep it confidential and to protect it from the public. That's not a standard that is used to judge whether a third party is guilty of infringement. It's a different concept in trade secret law. The concept is that you don't possess a trade secret if it has been publicly disclosed. That's not the same as when does someone else misappropriate and take your trade secret. This idea that a trade secret is the competitive advantage, or as you call it, Judge, market power, is key. CNF had a competitive advantage and market power. They got stripped away when Pizza Hut took its trade secret and gave it to IBP. With most trade secrets, competitors do eventually catch up, and then the trade secret loses its value. The key of when it's valuable is when you still have that competitive advantage. That got taken away. That stripped CNF of its valuable capital asset.
Did that happen at a specific point in time, Ms. Johnson, or is that more of an evolutionary process?
It's more of an evolutionary process.
The day that one person has possessed of it, it becomes valueless. Is that your position?
It doesn't necessarily become valueless, but the question here doesn't turn on it losing all of its value completely. If there was damage to the capital asset, that damage and the payment that you receive in compensation for it is capital gain. So the change-up that the government has tried to put in here, where the change the test to be loss rather than damage, is not supported by the law. So that's why it's just not relevant if it's lost completely. It was most certainly damaged, and the compensation we received was payment.
Would you feel it was alleged damage? I would have asked him. I asked too many questions anyway. But if you had alleged damage as opposed to lost profits, would that have been the end of it? You get capital gain?
I think it should be the end of it.
I read something like that.
And we get capital gain no matter how that capital gain gets measured. CNF did plead that it was damaged in that it lost profits and lost opportunities and other things. The idea that, or the allegation that CNF did not plead that its trade secret was damaged doesn't fit with what's actually in the pleadings. CNF specifically pled that Pizza Hut disclosed the process to IBP and that the process is being used to make sausage at no compensation to CNF, and that CNF has been effectively eliminated as a viable source of product made with its own process and effectively denied from exploiting the technology. That's in the complaint at paragraph 49. That is the key of damage to the trade secret. It's being competitively exploited, and they don't get any benefit of it.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson.
Thank you.
Thanks, Wayne. Case is taken under advisement.